But he also wrote a book at the time called Fallout, The Environmental Consequences of the World Trade Center Collapse. And that does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Doug Deuce, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Aramate, Jen Utes, Mike DeFilippo, Nick Marsilio, and Miguel Noguera, our engineers. Our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. It's just about 6 o'clock. That means it's time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. And very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We're back after a brief hiatus. I just want to apologize for the dead air before. That was my fault. I almost did a phantom show. Phantom show is when you do an entire broadcast here at the radio station unaware that it's not going out over the air. It's happened. It's happened to a bunch of people. But in my particular case, I just neglected to have something vital turned up, and I figured it out quickly, fortunately. Because it would have been a shame to miss this show. Yeah, there would have been no record of it at all. And this is the first program back on this May 1st, May Day, for the last 3 weeks. Yeah, I was away for 3 weeks. And usually what happens when I go away is I make a program one way or another. I always find a way. And sometimes that involves making a tape of some sort or making a recording from wherever I happen to be. This particular time, I didn't want to be weighed down with that. Didn't want to be weighed down with having to produce a program and send it in and all that kind of thing, because what was happening over the last 3 weeks was very, very unusual. And I kind of wanted to focus all my attention on that. Some of you may have heard, best that you heard from me, but some of you may have heard through the grapevine or maybe through the other radio show, that I went to a very unusual place over the past couple of weeks. Yes, North Korea. I made it over to North Korea despite all the odds, and I gotta tell you, it was an amazing experience. It was absolutely incredible. Not something I'd recommend for most people I know. Because, well, it involves a lot of patience. It involves a lot of sort of modifying your expectations so as not to expect the things that you're used to. It's hard to really put it, but basically you're in a very alien environment. And you have to keep that in mind. Things don't work the same. And once you get that through your head, you can really kind of relax and enjoy yourself and take it all in. And that's what I tried to do, and hopefully, during this show and during other shows in the future, because we just have so much material, you'll get a taste of that. And you can perhaps experience a little bit of it yourself. It's really kind of surprising. Well, let's start with something interesting. It's always fun to inject little bits and pieces here and there. And what I've got is something that I found, well, it was on their radio, but it was also on their television. They would play music all the time and associate it with all sorts of video images. And after you've been in that country for several days, you start to associate it with the same images because it's kind of pounded into your head. All the monuments, all the historic locations, and it all starts to kind of gel at some point. And it only took a couple of days before this song was ingrained in my head. Kind of, I don't know, maybe somebody out there who speaks the language, speaks Korean, can tell me what's being said. I'm sure it's some kind of praise to the great leader or the dear leader or the Juche philosophy that they have over there, self-reliance. All sorts of other Korean nationalism, reunification, you name it. It's all probably in there someplace, but I don't understand the words, so I'm not sure what's being said here. But this song was being played constantly on the television and on the radio, and to the sight of various video images that I was now familiar with, and whenever I heard it come on the radio, I was like, yeah, that's American Top 40 type of a thing. This is one of their hits. So let's listen to this. We'll be back talking about various other things going on over there, going on over here. And with luck, we can get the phones to work and take your phone calls in just a little bit. Now, straight off of Pyongyang Radio in North Korea, here is one of the more popular songs of the day. Thank you. I don't know its name. I don't know what the words mean, but boy, that thing is catchy. That's the song I heard on, I don't want to call it Radio Pyongyang because I'm not sure if that's the name of the station. I know that's the name of their shortwave station. I'm not sure what the name of the station I was listening to and that I recorded that off of in Pyongyang is. I do know, though, that that radio station is pretty much the only station you can hear. They show up on, I think, 16 or 17 different frequencies in that city. And I believe the way the radio is set up in that country is that every major area has its own radio station, because I was able to pick up kind of a fringe station coming in from someplace else, sounded distant, and it was playing something different, similar, but different. And when I was in Kaesong, which is in the south of the country, the station was also different. They identify themselves, they say the word Pyongyang on the hour, so it seems pretty obvious that it's local radio. Not sure when they connect for, maybe for the news on the hour, I don't know. It's localized radio, which is kind of interesting. Not really that localized, since it's the only station in town that you can listen to, but also not one national station. So that's interesting. Taped off the radio station there. And sorry for the bad sound at the beginning. That was our fault. Once again, we had a bad patch cable, which is going into the trash right after the show. No excuse for a bad patch cable. I'm sorry about that. That comes from my recently concluded trip over to North Korea. And let me actually put something else on in the background, because I have so much that I want to get through here, that I want to share, that I want you to hear. And this is more of a lengthy taping off of their... don't tell me this one's not working either. Hang on. We're having all kinds of technical problems here. It doesn't help that it's something like 85 degrees in the studio. But apparently, okay, was that my fault? All right. Yeah, the brain starts to go when it gets above 80 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know why it's so hot in here. It was hot when I left, and we're trying to get the university to stop pumping in the heat, but I think they just, I don't know what they want happened to this place. There we go. All right. This is a very common sound you'll hear in North Korea, the sound of opera. They're really... As I'm tuning the station in, they're really big into opera. And a lot of it sounds really kind of neat. I just wish I knew what they were saying. I never know what they're saying when they're singing in English, let alone in Korean. But let's listen to a couple of seconds of this anyway. Now, this comes from something I taped off the radio the first night I was there, and it's just kind of a collection of musical pieces, I guess done in front of an audience, but it's really kind of strange. Korean audiences are not very animated, North Korean audiences, that is. You'll hear applause, but you'll never hear cheering, and it's always applause in unison. Now, some people I know went to a soccer game. I wish I had gone to this, but I was really kind of tired. I didn't feel like going to any more events or places. But the soccer game that was part of an Olympic qualifying match was very unusual in that the crowd was extremely quiet. They were just watching the game, and whenever something good happened, they'd stand up and applaud, but no wild cheering or anything that you might be accustomed to at a Western-style football match. So similarly here, if you listen to this particular bit of music, in between the pieces, you'll hear applause, but it sounds like it could be a recording of applause, because there's nothing really unique about it. I'm told that's the way audiences are. It's part of the culture. It's part of how they don't go too crazy as far as showing their appreciation. But polite applause, I guess, is the way to describe that. So this was part of a program that just played one musical piece after another. I imagine it was all being performed in front of these people. And in between the pieces also, you'll hear an announcer... I think an announcer in that particular live recording speaking to the audience. And she speaks in a way that's that's kind of unusual. It's sort of what drew me over to the place in the first place, because it just is so unusual. Kind of this animated way of speaking, this very emotional way of speaking, almost always having something to do with Kim Il-sung or Kim Jong-il, the great leader and the dear leader, respectively. And I guess words of adulation, very highly emotional. Some people talk like that in real life. Newscasters talk like that all the time, it seems. Anyway, let's listen to the break between songs, and you'll hear the applause and the animated speech.
Goryeo-in 통일연합회 예술단에서 출연하는 여성 독창입니다. 조선 노래 김일성 장군님은 우리의 태양, 출연의 남별.
Kind of sounds like the theme to a Little House on the Prairie or something, but I'm sure it's containing totally different material. So that was part of a radio program that I just recorded the first night I was there, listening for a long time, actually, which was pretty neat being able to witness this. Also, the television had all kinds of strange things on it, strange by our standards, I imagine, totally normal by their standards. One channel, one television channel. That's all. That's, I think, for the entire nation. On the weekends, two channels, maybe three, but the material pretty much the same. Newscasts, patriotic films, and music videos. Music videos pretty much to the sound of this music. So why? Why would anybody want to go to a place like this? Well, like I've said to many people, the odds of me going to another planet are pretty slim. This is the closest thing. This is the closest thing to a completely alien society that I ever could have hoped to achieve. And I certainly did feel like I achieved that. I certainly did feel like going over there was probably the most unusual thing I'd so far done. And I gotta say, I was blown away by the place. I was blown away by some of the surprises, some of the things that I wasn't expecting. I was expecting this based on what we're fed. And I'm sorry, we are fed as much propaganda as the rest of the world insofar as how to think of certain people, how to treat certain people, how to think of ourselves in the bigger scheme of things. I expected a society of fearful, cowed-looking people with a blighted landscape and all sorts of tones of ominousness in the air. Is that the right word? Ominousness? It's a crazy word to say. And, you know, the first thing I noticed when I got over there was these people aren't really hostile. Everybody from the people at the airport checking you into the country and the people bringing you on a bus into the city, they all seem kind of not hostile. That surprised me right there. And then there was more interaction with people, ordinary people, and that alone surprised me, because I was told such a thing simply was not possible. Well, guess what? It is. Let's listen to the break between songs. I'll tell you more in a second.
악단에서 출연하는 남성 중음 독창입니다. 라흐마니노브 작곡 가극 알레꼬 중에서 알레꼬의 아리아, 출연의 국제 콩쿨 수상자 위탈리 마춘스키, 피아노 반주의 라나 굴레다바.
나 너무 생각하면 he was introducing the piano player. I'm not sure if the language is that similar where the word for piano sounds like piano in Korean, but if anybody out there knows what is being said here, please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to get a translation. So anyway, it was shortly after arriving that a bunch of us, we were in a tour group, two groups of 20, really, as we have another opera piece in the background. And we started to notice after the first day or so, first day and a half, that the people were not as introverted as you might expect. And by people, I mean people that were not part of your group, were not part of the place you were staying or the people showing you around. I'm talking about people that you would just pass by while driving on a bus or even walking down a street. Because, yes, you could walk down a street. That's something else. I think immediately upon arriving in North Korea, that's what surprised me. I was under the impression that every single sight that you saw was 100% completely controlled and that you didn't even get to drive down a normal street. You didn't get to see normal North Koreans. Everybody you saw was part of it. Part of the whole elaborate stage to portray their country in a particular way. And that, my friends, is not the case. We drove from the airport all the way into Pyongyang, which is probably about maybe a 25-minute drive. And admittedly, not very many cars on the road. That's a fact. But one thing we noticed on that drive was that the streets were crowded with people. And that the streets were very dark. There's not a lot of light. There's some lights on the inside. There were no street lights, no traffic lights. A lot of energy conservation going on there. And it's the most bizarre feeling to see a street crowded full of people, a city street, completely crowded, except it's completely dark. And apparently you get used to that pretty quickly, because after a few days it didn't seem to freak us out quite as much. But just traveling that first trip from the airport to the hotel and realizing that, wow, we're traveling through real streets, we're seeing real people, we're seeing the buildings they live in. It's not being shielded from our eyes. We can actually see, look, there's a tram crowded full of people. There are people waiting for a bus. There are some people in a shop. People can buy things. There's food. There are things that you can purchase. Normal North Koreans going about their daily business. Isn't that something? That alone, right there, was enough to really floor me, because it's not what I was expecting. And then, afterwards, after the first day or so, when we were driving around in the daytime, and we started to interact with the people, the regular people, just by waving out the window of the bus and seeing the reaction of these normal people, which at first seemed a little, wow, who are these strange-looking people? And then faces erupting and smiles and waving back and all sorts of histrionics and celebration and just happiness at seeing strangers waving at them. It's a universal thing. It's a universal feeling. And those were the early days. Those are the early days where we were just kind of figuring out, wow, it's okay to interact with these people. If you read a lot of the intelligence that floats around there, they say that North Koreans are very hostile of outsiders, and that if you even try to make contact with anybody or take a picture or anything, you'll be immediately reported. And while you might not get in trouble, the people in charge of you certainly will. And I found that to be completely opposite from what we actually experienced. People were happy to wave at us, happy to pose for pictures, and not seemingly frightened of our appearance at all, and not seemingly unhappy and miserable and cowed. Now, don't think I'm buying into any particular system, any particular regime. I'm just noting what the people were like. That's my reason for going over there, was to see what the people were like, what day-to-day life was like, and listen to the radio and watch TV and things like that. You know, actually, coming up is a song I like. While you might think that a lot of the music just has to do with idolizing the leaders and regime and things like that, there are some other pieces too, which I find to be rather interesting musically. And this piece coming up, I don't know what they're going to say before it or after it, but I thought that was kind of like an experimental piece that I think would be worthy of any airwaves. So let's listen to that. We'll be back in a few minutes with more. Radio from Pyongyang, North Korea.
몽골 손군 협조단에서 출연하는 관현악입니다. 바람 속의 새, 지휘 에노 파야르. 최고령인 청일연합회 예술단에서 출연하는 여성 독창입니다. 조선 노래 선군 밀리리 출연의 남별.
오케이, okay, and that was my favorite song that I heard. I think throughout the whole time was that weird experimental type piece. As North Korean radio moves into something even more strange, they just keep changing the tempo into all sorts of different things. So, yeah, I got a lot of that. Got a lot more material to share in future shows, and I do plan on putting a lot of this online: pictures, video, radio, audio, you name it. And there were very few restrictions as far as what we could actually do once we were in a particular place. No one said, don't take a photo of this. Nobody said, you're not allowed to take pictures now, with one exception, one big exception, and that was going through the mausoleum to see the preserved body of the great leader Kim Il-sung. And I'm not saying myself the great leader, I'm saying that's the title that they give him, the great leader, so please keep the cards and letters from coming in. I'm getting all kinds of grief from people who are outraged that I would dare to go visit a country that they don't like. They don't like North Korea, so therefore nobody should go over there and check it out and see what it's like. Keep something in mind. We're not at war with them, okay? At least not yet. I certainly hope we never are at war with them, because these people are not our enemies. Having actually met them, having interacted with the people that are walking around the streets, the civilians, the people who would feel the brunt of any kind of military action, misguided military action on the part of this country, they are not the enemy, and they've got a particular way of life that they're used to. There are things they do that we can never understand, as there are things we do they can never understand. This doesn't speak to any of the evil stuff, bad things that could be happening in any part of the world, and that part is certainly no exception. That's not what I have information on. I didn't go over there with access to certain things. I went over there to experience what life was like, and I was pretty surprised. And then, the hotel we stayed at, surprisingly enough, another surprise, actually had BBC World available to anybody at the hotel, which is more than we do in this country for foreign travelers. We don't provide BBC World. So I was able to kind of, every now and then, turn on that particular channel and see what was going on in the rest of the world, because you don't really find that out by watching North Korean television. And, of course, the people who live there don't get to see BBC World. They only get the one channel, so they may never know what's going on in other parts of the world. But I almost wish that I didn't have that access, because as soon as I turn on the television set to see, okay, what's going on? What's going on back home? I wished I hadn't, because I found out what was going on back home. Yet another massive shooting, this time Virginia Tech. Yeah, that's how I found out about it. Whenever I go overseas, it seems something horrible happens here. Back in 2005, it was Katrina, and now Virginia Tech. And I got to say, you know, seeing that happen, seeing that unfolding, where we had, 33 people killed by one lunatic? You just have to sort of ask yourself, are we that much better off in the society that we have right now, this incredibly violent society, where we seem to think that there's no recovery, and that the only solution is to step it up even more, so that we can have shootouts in churches and all sorts of things like that? You know, there's so many parts of the world, so not just North Korea, but so many parts of the world where something like that is as alien as a spaceship. It just could not happen. Obviously, one of the reasons it couldn't happen is because people don't have as easy access to firearms. That's one reason. But another reason, which I think is more interesting, is the fact that it's not something ingrained in their mindset. Walking into a public place and taking out as many people as you can. It's something that, for some reason, however it happened, it's in our minds. This is almost normal. And just turning on the set over there in Pyongyang and seeing this, I was like, oh my God. It just never ends. It just never ends. We're so sad and pathetic, and we don't even realize it. And talking to a lot of fellow travelers, this is something rather ironic. These are people who travel around the world, go to various places, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Africa, all different countries there. And a lot of times, you know, you find that you've been to the same places as these people who you just happen to meet in one of the bizarrest cities in the world. And so we're all there in North Korea, all experiencing this for the first time. And get this, the overriding sentiment as far as where people would like to go and where people don't want to go. Yeah, North Korea is interesting. Not nearly as hard to get around as you might think. Controlled, yes, but pleasant all the same and enlightening. And a place like Cambodia, certainly frightening, horrible past, but promising future. Other places around the world, scary, but accessible. But the place that so many people, more people, I think, expressed fear about coming to was the United States. Yeah, our own country. They were afraid to come here because, well, for one thing, we're the only country that takes your fingerprints and takes a picture of you and stores it forever. And who knows? Who knows what we do with that? And, of course, there's Guantanamo Bay. Yeah, the whole world knows about that. Torture chambers for people from other countries that we somehow feel we have the right to take prisoner. Well, they were about to attack us, so we took them into custody. You know, that kind of logic might work on a second-rate TV show. It doesn't work in real life. And there's a price to pay. Price to pay is our self-image. And around the world, that self-image is it's in the trash can. It really is. Regardless of how you feel about the rightness or wrongness of the quote-unquote war on terror, the situation in Iraq, how you feel about other countries, one thing you can't escape is that our image has gone way downhill. And just the irony of sitting there in North Korea talking to people saying how they would never come to the United States because they're afraid of that regime. Wow. Talk about an eye-opener. So anyway, after getting back home and reading up some more about what went on at Virginia Tech, boy, I didn't want to know anything more about it there. I turned off the TV set at that point, figuring, you know, I'm just going to hear more bad news from back home. It's just going to depress me. This is something that really, it just makes you realize how incredibly hard it is to affect any kind of change with the attitudes that are out there. Now, when a judge deemed Virginia Tech shooter Sung-hui Cho, who, by the way, was South Korean, a danger to himself due to mental illness in 2005, that ruling should have disqualified him from buying a handgun under federal law, but it did not. His slaughter of 32 people last week has raised questions about the efficacy of instant background checks for firearms purchases by the mentally ill. Under federal law, anyone who has been judged to be a danger to himself or others because of mental illness, as Cho was, should be prohibited from buying a gun. His status should have been noted in the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, a database of people disqualified from gun purchases. But in Cho's case, his mental status never went in the system, and that's because the federal government relied on Virginia to provide the information, and Virginia law disqualifies a person from buying firearms only if they have been involuntarily committed to a mental hospital. Now, Cho was ordered to undergo outpatient treatment, but he was never committed. So Virginia never reported him. He wasn't flagged, and the system failed. Now, since then, Governor Timothy Kaine has closed that loophole so that that kind of a thing supposedly cannot happen again. But it doesn't close enough loopholes. For instance, legislation that would subject firearm sales at gun shows to instant background checks. Instant background checks. Not even waiting. Just checking out who's buying these guns at gun shows. They introduce this every year in Virginia. Every year it dies without even reaching the floor in the General Assembly. And this is only one state. So, yeah, you can have all sorts of crazy people out there going around getting guns for whatever purposes they wish to use them for. And then you have all the quote-unquote law-abiding people who get guns, and then one day, snap, and they happen to have a gun in their pocket. How many times do we have to hear this to know that it happens all the time? And yet, in all seriousness, people come up to me and present solutions with such elements as, well, if more people had been carrying guns, then this guy couldn't have gotten away with it. Yeah. So the solution, and seriously, people are, I mean, this is what floors the rest of the world, and it still floors me, because only a couple of decades ago, this would have been laughed out of any room that you spoke it in. Actually designating, say, professors in a school as being able to carry guns so that they can protect their students. This is what we're living in now. This is the kind of world we are living in our country right now, where we actually think, a lot of us actually think, that professors need to engage in shootouts to prevent their students from being picked off by snipers or crazed killers. And yeah, they're willing to just go about their lives saying, yeah, this is what you got to do. It's the only way to survive. We all have to be armed. We all have to be ready to engage in a massive shootout any time. It's called being prepared. I call it being insane. My God, what has happened to this country where we actually have to think along these lines? We need to do something that strikes a lot deeper than just figuring out how to outshoot some lunatic. Here's an editorial that appeared in the New York Times a couple of days ago. It's actually pretty good. By now, the logic is almost automatic. A shooter takes innocent lives, and someone says that if the victims had been armed, this wouldn't have happened. The only solution to a gun in the wrong hands, it seems, is a gun in the hands of everyone. That's the state of the debate over gun control today. The National Rifle Association and the gun lobby have silenced every legislature in this country. Instead of stricter laws, tighter controls, and better background checks, the gun lobby proposes more guns. And what the gun lobby proposes, lawmakers deliver. Sung-hui Cho bought his guns legally, though with the appearance... I'm sorry, he bought his guns illegally, though with the appearance of legality. He slipped through a loophole, through a disconnect between the way Virginia defines a disqualifying mental incapacity and the way the federal government does. After the fact, the loophole is self-evident, and it's tempting to believe that now political leaders will work harder to keep people who are dangerous to themselves from becoming dangerous to others by buying guns. But the laws are as fragile and imperfect as they are because that is how the gun lobby wants them, and it's paying good money to keep them that way. Those gun advocates who believe that the Second Amendment confers the right to carry a gun in public are quick to point out that they are law-abiding, decent citizens trying to protect themselves and their families in a world gone mad. But of course, the guns can't tell the difference. Arming more people would be a recipe for disaster. True safety lies in the civility of society, in laws that publicly protect all of our rights, and in having law enforcement officials who are trained in the use of deadly force, then authorized to apply it in rationally defined situations. It is the gun lobby's incessant efforts to weaken the gun laws that makes a tragedy like the one at Virginia Tech possible. Thank you, New York Times. That puts the blame squarely on these idiots who keep thinking that more guns somehow equals more freedom and more safety. It doesn't. It results in things like this. It makes it easy for the wrong people to get their hands on these weapons, and makes it a horrible tragedy for the rest of us having to deal with this. And again, it completely destroys our reputation in the rest of the world, makes us look like a bunch of crazy lunatics. Too many of us are just obsessed with this. It's just sad. It's just really, really sad to think of a situation like this. When I was back in China after being in North Korea, I was reading some English language newspapers over there talking about this, saying how such a thing wouldn't be possible in Chinese society because, well, for one thing, Chinese citizens can't own guns, at least not guns like that. And yeah, I know what the response to that will be from many people, that, well, you know what, they also don't have freedom, and that's true, they don't have freedom over there. Chinese society is not a democracy, no question about it. But tell me something. How different do you think Tiananmen Square would have been if those kids had had guns? Do you think they would have won? Do you think they would have stood up against those tanks? Do you think that maybe a lot more people would have died as a result? I don't think it would have made any difference whatsoever. And As I recall, communism fell in Eastern Europe without the use of weapons. Simple people power is what did it. So that's not the reason. The reason is because people just want to be able to shoot things and shoot each other and appear macho. It's got nothing to do with overthrowing any kind of government. If it did, we'd be seeing people doing it now, because there's never been the kind of backlash against an administration in this country as there is right now. And obviously nothing's happening. Nothing's changing. All right, continuing with the craziness. And by the way, if you want to give us a call, we have a few minutes. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. By the way, thanks to everybody who called in to pledge in the 2 weeks we were on. You know, we raised $5,000 in 2 hours on this program. I think we raised, a fifth of the total amount for the entire radiothon. So that's awesome. You guys are helping this place stay alive. So thanks, off-the-wall listeners. Again, 631-632-9872. All five of the Delaware County Community College campuses in Pennsylvania remained closed yesterday, 4 days after an email threatening unspecified violence was received by college faculty. Police don't have any specific details on a suspect, they say. The email, just one paragraph long, threatened violence on Monday or Tuesday at the college's Exton and Downington campuses, both located in Chester County. The writer of the email mentions feeling stressed out and unhappy. So that's all it takes, somebody feeling stressed out, unhappy, to close a whole bunch of campuses because you don't know what he's capable of, what he could have access to. Yesterday we had a shooting at a Missouri shopping center where the mall shooter he's referred to in Kansas City, Missouri, supposedly mentally ill, but was able to get his hands on all kinds of weapons and shoot all kinds of people and cause all sorts of mayhem. I could just go on and on. I've got pages and pages of stories like this, but time's running out, and I think I've made the point. Our society is messed up. We've got to do something about it. Let's go to the phone, 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, Manuel. Good to hear you.
Thanks. Thanks for calling.
But, hey, listen, I like you, you know, like to travel, and North Korea is on my list of places to go. I had a buddy of mine who went there last summer, and he said, you know, it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, I don't know what you're reading or what you like to look at, but we're, I mean, most Americans do have some kind of common sense. I mean, give us some credit. Who really thinks North Korea is exactly what you described as a bunch of solemn people just walking around and, you know, just, you know, hating life and all like that?
Well, watch any documentary that appears on, say, Discovery or CNN or any of those channels, and they will paint a very dark picture of the society. You won't see people laughing and smiling and having fun like we did, you know, and it wasn't staged. It was basically, you know, walking through a park and just seeing random people, and you know what? They're having fun. They're enjoying their lives. They're not miserable. They're not living under fear. Now, that's not to say that everything is peaches and roses over there, and there isn't a lot that should be changed. It is saying, though, that these are human beings, and we shouldn't look at them as some ominous force with dark music playing in the background all the time.
Yeah, because all right, I was just kind of curious because I understand North Korea as exactly what you described it as. As what you described it as seeing, not mm-hmm. what every, I guess, typical person doesn't know too much about the country.
Well, you know somebody who went over there. Is that how you got your impressions?
Yeah, and he sent me a bunch of pictures, and you know he has a one of the online photo things, and mm-hmm. I got a chance to see for myself. And there's also a film I'm sure you've seen. It's called The State of Mind.
I haven't seen that one yet. I've seen Game of Their Lives, which is an incredible film made by the same people.
That one, I don't know. What's it called again?
The Game of Their Lives. Basically, it's about the 1966 World Cup, where the North Korean team made it further than they've ever made it before. And what's amazing about this is that the game was being played in England. The entire World Cup was being played in England. And for some reason, I guess because they were underdogs or just because they kept coming from behind, the English public just fell in love with the team. And before you knew it, everybody in England was waving North Korean flags and cheering on this team, hoping that they'd go all the way and make it to the World Cup final. And it's just incredible how something as simple as a game can really bring forth the humanity in all of us and make enemies into friends. I did not know that even happened. And it's an excellent film that just demonstrates all of that.
I'm going to have to look for that one. But if you get a chance, believe it or not, I think I found state of mind. I found it at the local video Blockbuster, whatever they're called.
Uh-huh.
I found it there, and it really opened my eyes to what the country is really like. Now, granted, yes, it's all in Pyongyang. It's not outside. You know, the stuff that's outside, okay, you know, that's not really that happier picture. We all know that, all right? But actually, in Pyongyang, it's different.
You know? Mm-hmm.
It's very different. I just, it's too bad that most people just don't want to or don't know too much or don't want to know too much about the country. Everybody just thinks that, you know, don't, you know, it's still communist and it's still.
Well, it is definitely still communist. It's the last Stalinist state around. And they do control where you go, and, you know, that obviously rubs a lot of people the wrong way. But I was in other places besides Pyongyang. I was also in Kaesong. I was also in Mount Paektu and various other small places along the way, rode on a train, rode on a bus. And, yeah, you see a lot of people in the fields that don't look too happy picking or planting rice or doing whatever they do. But I didn't see any obvious signs of really bad things, you know, prison camps or starvation. Not saying that kind of thing doesn't exist. Obviously, you know, you didn't get the whole picture. But Pyongyang wasn't the only place with friendly, smiling people is all I want to say.
All right, good enough. I'll go along with that. Because like, I plan on going myself. It may not be this summer, but it may be as soon as next summer because, you know, money and all like that. But it's on my list, and it's going to be there. I'm going to be there shortly.
Well, it's different than anything you probably ever experienced, and you just got to modify your expectations. Obviously, you can't walk around and go wherever you want to go. It's just a tour of a very strange place.
That's where I want to go, and that's why I want to.
Okay, good. Well, enjoy yourself, and let me know what happens.
Another phone call, and I'll listen off air. Thanks
okay, thanks. Thanks for calling, and good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yeah, hi. It's a good point you make about expectations of various countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could remember the name of the project, but there is a project going on in Iraq where they gave a number of young adults, video camcorders
mm-hmm.
to try and document what's really going on in the country from a positive standpoint as well as a negative.
Right.
And which is kind of a neat idea because, as you said, you know, when you look at Korea and you think it's just a bunch of goose-stepping brown shirts and whatnot, it's also important to remember that or have a face of humanity on the people that do live every day in Iraq and have to put up with the chaos that Bush has started over there and so on.
Hmm. You know, it's easy to get that impression of North Korea, of all the goose-stepping and military, because there is a lot of military presence everywhere you look. Like, for instance, if you're riding through the mountains, you'll see soldiers just stationed in the middle of nowhere. You'll see maybe a group of 20 soldiers marching down a remote path. And in the cities, of course, you see even more. And then you go beyond the military outfits and you see the coordinated dances of the Erang Mass Games Festival or various other festivals that they have. And, it's a very different society. They're very united and coordinated in various ways. And some of that is a positive thing. Certainly not all of it, but some of it is a very positive thing.
Great presence.
I mean, the Mass Games itself.
All around and also a very strong nationalistic pride.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, you know, not fanatic, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's an element of that as well. But really, when it comes down to it, what I got out of this was that the only thing that they really wanted from people visiting their country was to listen to their point of view and to respect their feelings and what they believe in. And they don't expect you to convert. They don't expect you to preach this doctrine all throughout the world. They just want it to be legitimized, taken seriously, respected. And that's exactly what our government does not give them, and I think that's part of maybe
exactly.
80% of the reason why things are in such a state. It would be so simple to make these people our friends and to proceed from there and fix all the problems, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lost art of diplomacy. And certainly, unfortunately, Bush's regime, if I may, has really just trampled on diplomacy mm-hmm. while potentially or pretending to spread democracy. And it's a shame, like you said, because you can't fix everything. And you can't, and there are some countries that do a lot of harm to their people and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, if there was more dialogue, I think we'd be a whole lot better off as a nation and as a world.
Right, unconditional dialogue, not dialogue where you have to say this and concede this before we even agree to talk to you, which seems to be the Bush administration way of doing it.
Exactly,
it's very detrimental.
No, I couldn't agree more. Nice show, good show.
Thanks. Any comment on the violence in our society today?
Well, yeah, I was going to comment on that. I don't know if violence has increased dramatically overall. I was going to comment to something that you said before. I'm a gun owner. It's not a macho thing. It's a sport thing. I don't hunt, but I enjoy marksmanship. I enjoy the collectability of it. I like the mechanics of it. It's just essentially a toy that can be used for fun as well as danger.
Can you walk into a school and take out most of the students with in 5 minutes with what you have?
I suppose if you really put your mind to it, you could. But I think the issue here is, a number of years ago, there was a guy on a Staten Island ferry that took out a number of people, maybe not 30, but he took them out with a sword.
Well, I think he took two people out. But
they're wacko.
Yeah, but obviously there are wackos out there. I'm just saying, if you give people access to things that can take out a huge number of people very quickly, you're going to have bigger problems than the occasional sword.
Yeah, look, I can't totally disagree with you. I I'm not a member of the NRA, and I think they're a little bit fanatic on that side of the coin. So I agree with you in that respect, and I do think the lobbies are a little too strong and so on, and I think the Second Amendment is sometimes misinterpreted and certainly bastardized for certain agendas. No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just question whether outlawing all the guns and so on would do the job.
Obviously,
there's a great,
quote,
I'll have to paraphrase it because I don't remember the exact quote, but it's more or less it says, now that all guns are registered for the first time, we can have a free and safe society. And that's a paraphrase, of course, but it was said by Adolf Hitler in 1932, I believe, or 39.
Yeah, well, he said all kinds of things.
I think there's a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason, if you look at what it takes to buy a true machine gun, you and I could go out in America and buy one, but it's an intensive process and, frankly, not really worth it, and most people don't bother. It's real expensive and it's real controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So could there be better controls on guns? Yeah, I think there could be. I think there are some tighter controls that could come up with a national database. I think they should enforce the 3-day rule or a 7-day rule. Take your pick. I think Virginia had some loopholes that have to be closed up and so on. I think there are some things we can do without becoming part of the knee-jerk reaction, as most of the media is, to events like this, which are tragic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's careful to look at it in the scheme of things, in the percentage or statistical perspective, and do something that's intelligent without becoming equally as fanatic in the extreme, that's all.
Okay, listen, we're out of time. Thanks for your comments.
Right on, thanks. Bye-bye.
And again, our email address, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you with all sorts of thoughts and feelings and complaints and threats and whatever else you feel the need to share. It's not just a question of the guns. It's a question of just the violent attitude that we have. The whole time I was away, I did not see any conflict between people. I did not see people, I saw arguing, occasional things like that, but nothing major, which you would expect in city situations, particularly in Beijing. And within hours of coming back here, I witnessed all sorts of near-violent confrontations. One day I saw three fights, two at the same gas station where cops were being called and all sorts of racial things were being said. We live in a very unpleasant place right now. We need to address that. We need to fix that. And we've got a long way to go. Anyway, with those optimistic words, I want to say goodnight to everybody. OTW@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds. I'm getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street. Singing songs and they're carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. thoughts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.